The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
We're going live, everybody. Simmer down now. Welcome, everybody, to another exciting episode of the Clicks Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah!
As you may or may not have noticed, I am not Tim D-O-double-G. You might be oblivious to that fact, and if you are, you got good meth. But for those of you watching, I am Dirt from the Pop Culture Network. I will be running the show tonight. I've got lots of little buttons and different settings and stuff. I've screwed up Tim's entire setup for doing the show. When he comes in, he'll have no idea what's going on because I had to fiddle with everything. Joining us also tonight, we have Roddy Cat.
It's me! Yay!
What's up, everybody?
Mr. At Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And he's also got the Bit.ly link for the show notes there. Why Bit.ly? Why don't you use like Tiny CC or
whatever? You know, I don't know. I don't know.
On the spot with no answer. That's
right. That's a good question.
And man behind the sound effects is Agent_70.
What's up, everybody?
And we can't just say Agent 70. It has to be Agent_70.
Exactly.
We'll get like the wrong Twitter account, right?
That's right.
Well, legal will also come after us too.
That's Do you know who Agent 70 actually is?
Like that's a good question. You know what? I should check that out.
See, start with the hard hitting off the bat. What is going on?
Asking the questions no one has answers to. That's what I do best.
Oh man!
All right, so this
I was gonna say I don't think Twitter allowed me to do Agent 70. Mm.
But yeah, they don't want you to try to pass yourself off as a government employee or something.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
All right, this is episode 155 of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, and if you want to catch this show live, you don't have to worry about the crazy invitation links that we tweet out every week. You can just simply go to theclicknation.com/live, and you'll see the link to YouTube embedded there in the page, and you can just watch it stream directly off the Click Nation website. So, much easier for you guys. That's what we're here for, to make it easy for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the news for this week. First of all, I guess the big thing was the Super Bowl aired every trailer and magical commercial known to man. Did anybody actually watch the game?
Yes. Sports, no. Sports.
Yeah.
Foosball.
Yes, I'm the resident sports guy. Here on the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles this week, and I did watch the game. Congratulations to Peyton Manning on winning his second Super Bowl. Congratulations to the Denver Broncos. Other than that, we did see a bunch of these trailers that you mentioned. It was a lot of fun trying to catch them. I was mentioning earlier, just before the show aired, that the Captain America Civil War trailer that aired very early in the broadcast. And, you know, luckily, if you were tuned into social media while you were watching the game, they tweeted out and published links to the full trailer pretty much simultaneously with the showing on the CBS broadcast.
All right, so, Roddy, since you did not actually watch the show, have you gone through and watched any of these spots online?
I did. I think I watched all of them, with the exception of the Deadpool one. The Civil War one was pretty good. It had a couple of new clips of things. Mm-hmm. That Hulk Ant-Man commercial was slightly weird. And I think
it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was amusing. I was like, all right, that's novel, sure. The Batman-Superman... Let's go ahead into the trailer. The Batman Superman trailer was actually pretty good in spots, except for that weird music they had going along with it, because it was kind of different from the music they've been using. So they just kind of went full rock, whatever, with it. And I don't know if it needs that kind of
Are we talking about the trailer that dropped today, or the Super Bowl commercials that were basically commercials for Turkish Airlines?
Well, so I'm talking about the one today.
What aired during the Super Bowl was kind of a weird pseudo commercial
for Turkish, well, it was a commercial for Turkish Airlines, but the pseudo part was for, they were basically like Chamber of Commerce commercials for the city of Metropolis and the city of Gotham, and the city of Gotham. And that was the weirdest part, and you kind of had to suspend a little bit of disbelief and just kind of take it in as as an experience and watch the trailer. Both trailers were fairly. I think they seem fairly familiar. There was some new footage. A lot of it was narrated. I think the Metropolis one was it narrated by Lex Luthor? It's been a while since I've seen it.
I'm sure.
He speaks in it, but he doesn't narrate it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that's kind of a. I was going to say there was probably going to be like a product placement type thing. Like you're going to see a version of this in the movies or these in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can't say that for certain. Especially the way they were laid out, I kind of doubt it. I mean, it was. I guess nicely done for being, you know.
Well, it could also be one of those things like on the TV in the background and some, mm-hmm. you know, like they're sitting at the airport waiting for something or they're in the Daily yeah. Planet and walk past the TVs and you see the commercials, exactly. you know.
Yeah.
So I watched, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes of the actual game. I got invited to a party, so I went there for halftime and ate a bunch of snacks and then left. So
nice.
Because that's how I roll. But yeah. I didn't really see any of this stuff as it aired, so some of it I've watched online. But, I mean, for the most part, I guess I've just gone through enough TV shows and enough movies that I don't... If I'm in the movie theater and the trailer comes on, I'm like, oh, cool. But otherwise, I don't really go out of my way to hunt the stuff down anymore because eventually the movie is going to come out and I'm going to watch it. I don't get right. all that mm-hmm. hyped up for them anymore.
Yeah, and it kind of depends on the movie because, like, Batman Superman, for me, like... Just like I was saying, the trailer that happened today actually sold me a little bit more on it than the past few trailers, and I think that's a few people had that same thought. But outside of that, yeah, you don't really need to see too many commercials to kind of get the gist of things.
Well, and I think it was different, you know, 20 years ago when we're growing up, because there would be one big movie a year,
yeah.
and you would get like the one Star Trek movie every 4 years or whatever. And now it's like this constant churning. Like there's four giant genre movies every year. There's, you know, all these TV series. There'll be smaller movies that come out with these characters. And I don't know. It's just, I guess, oversaturated to the point where I don't get too excited because if I get excited for one, it's five movies down the line. I'm going to have so many other things coming before that it just doesn't seem like it's worth getting that hot and bothered about because of all the stuff that's barreling down the pipe.
Sure, sure.
True.
A different aspect of that also is we have access to it online right after. There was a time when you had to absolutely have your eyeballs tuned to the game or at least mm-hmm. to the commercials to be able to see these, you know, these trailers. So... you know, that, you know, nowadays it's just, you know, just kind of waiting for it to drop and then you can watch it online and it's in its full, you know, regalness. So I actually wanted to mention the one commercial that caught my attention more so than Batman vs. Superman or Captain America Civil War was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 spot.
I thought you were going to say the Super Bowl babies.
No, not with the puppy.
No, that was like Super Bowl babies with the choir.
No, the puppy monkey bee. Oh, jeez. Stuff of nightmares. But, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 spot was pretty... informative and entertaining to, you know, to anyone who grew up a fan of the cartoon from the late 80s. They showed off a lot of the characters who are crossing over into the film world, such as, spoiler alert, Krang, and we already knew about Bebop and Rocksteady, but to see Krang and this particular movie version of the character and his robot body was pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
I'll probably have to. I haven't watched that one, so I'll have to go and watch that one later.
I'm sorry. I'm glad I rang the spoiler bell, but
Well, no, it's like I said, I'm not that worried about stuff because there's just so much of it and it's always coming.
Yeah, the only thing I was kind of expecting out of that spot was somebody having a ringtone with the show tune, like deep 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 deep.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen
with everything that was going on in that thing.
Right, or some, or there'll be an arcade that they come into. Like old school arcade, where the controller game is going to be there, and kids are going to be playing it because that was very heavily influenced by the cartoon.
Yeah, except for Konami's gone down the tubes, and they probably wouldn't allow it to happen. So,
all right, well, moving on. Moving on from trailers, we had lots of other stuff going on. Apparently, it looks as if Deathstroke will not be returning to Arrow. There's a Tumblr question asking if Deathstroke or Ollie's former stepfather, Walter Steele, would pop up in Season 4, and Arrow producer Mark Guggenheim admitted that the character of Slade Wilson is currently tied up in another DC project. Which project?
I mean, that sounds like it would be a Suicide Squad one, unless they're just going to go strictly with a Deathstroke one, which, sure. But, you know, and when I first read about this, I was thinking, I was like, wait, they just didn't, they have something against Manu Bennett? Because they made it sound like, no, we don't want him coming back as the character at first. Because I know he had been, he had been talking some mess, like, a while back after the last time his character was on about, you know, wanting to be on or something.
But no, just that Slade Wilson is currently tied up in another DC project. As far as I know, he's not announced in Suicide Squad.
Right.
But I guess he could be one of those mystery characters that appears in there.
Right. Or he'll show up in Batman, Superman, or something.
Yeah, like everybody else under the sun is showing up in that movie.
Right.
But we'll see. Other news, CBS has named Brian Fuller as the Star Trek new series showrunner. Brian Fuller actually worked on Deep Space Nine and Voyager back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So he's got cred.
Yeah, so being the showrunner here. And this new Star Trek series is going to be new characters and adventures independent of the core franchise. So this is not the Enterprise. This is not going back to Deep Space Nine or Voyager. This is nothing we've seen before. It's going to be a new section of the universe.
Which is probably what it needed.
Probably. Let's see. Netflix released the first image with the new upcoming Voltron series. And we've got it right here if you want to take a look. You can just kind of see the shadowy image of Voltron there in the space clouds, but the new logo, streamlined, more electric, and Detroit heavy metal is what comes to mind there. But if you look at the Voltron robot back there, you can see a lot more curves than what he typically has. He was very boxy back in the day, and this shows him looking more like maybe he did in the Voltron Force cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But this is supposed to be a relaunch, so... not connected to any of the other series, so we'll see what happens. But that is that, as far as that goes.
Dio Del Toro, don't mess this up.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
James Gunn has said that Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 will have no Thanos or Infinity Stones.
Which, really need to, since they're going to be in Avengers.
Exactly. I think they're saving it. They don't necessarily need... They'll probably reference it at some point, but it won't be, you know, heavily featured.
Right.
Oh, it just seems like that's been so much of the background of the movies for so long.
Mm.
And especially with that one being in space, you would think that there would need to be, but, I mean, I guess, you know, whatever. Let's see. Grant Gustin reveals our first look at Flash and Supergirl crossover. He Instagrammed a picture of the two actors on set together, so if you want to jump on Instagram, you can check that out. We have news that Star Wars Episode 8 has officially begun filming, so there you go. If you live in New Zealand or... where are the other places that they're filming?
Wherever else they where they film.
The 19 other locations where they're filming worldwide. Go check that out. Haley Atwell has signed on to another ABC series, which may in fact be putting Agent Carter in danger. So, anyone who's a big fan of that show, watch out. Arrow brings back Amy Gumenik as Cupid. All right. And then the final piece of news here, what Roddy was talking about earlier, is that the final Batman vs. Superman trailer did launch today, and we've got a link to superherohype.com where you can check that out.
Yeah. When is this movie opening again? I should know this by heart.
March?
That is not
June?
So
Wait, yeah, March 25th. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's my sister's birthday. I should remember that date.
Seriously, guys, that is not that far away anymore. It is February 11th. Holy cow.
We are almost in the... any extra thoughts about it? When's Deadpool?
This weekend.
Yeah, Deadpool's
that's right. Oh,
tonight at midnight, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right. And I guess if any of us will have watched it by next week, we will have some thoughts about it.
Yeah, I've got plans to watch it on Saturday, so hopefully it's as entertaining as the reviews make it out to be.
All right, Internet. Good buzz. Internet, you have one job to do this weekend. One job, and that's
Deadpool. And that's what?
Nothing.
I have seen some legitimate hype for it, so I'm I'm really kind of curious as if it's going to make that hype. You
know. One thing I think it's safe with this movie is that there's probably not going to be a spoiler problem with this movie. I don't feel like there's really anything other than maybe a surprise character appearance that someone will blow, but otherwise I don't really think there's anything you can spoil in this film. It's not Deadpool is not a franchise built on secrets. And the X-Men movies never really had that issue, so I don't think a spoiler problem is going to happen with the Deadpool movie, but yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, not a very family-friendly character either, so that's going to be amusing if someone goes into it thinking otherwise.
It'll be like the South Park movie where there's going to be a parent or two dragging their kid out as soon as possible.
I'm wondering, this could be one of the first situations where someone's going to come out and say, there was no trigger warning, and I didn't know what to do. He said bad words, and he did things, and I was uncomfortable.
I mean...
I need a safe space to see my movies.
I mean, you know, that happens. I would not be surprised, but, you know, there's always going to be something like that.
Jeez. Do people actually talk like that outside of the damn hipsters?
Not necessarily like that, but, yeah, there has been some, there's been a lot of trigger warning, and which is necessary, so we don't want to belittle it, but,
Belittle it?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
I will. Relentlessly.
It's a legit thing, come on.
No, but it's not.
Trigger warnings. I'll give you a goddamn
It just gets overused a little too much. But that's
here's the trigger warning. You left the house.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
All right. Before we get any angry emails, let's keep going.
No, please send all the emails exactly. At popculturenetwork.com.
The views expressed herein are solely the views of _dirt and sometimes at @agent_70.
All right, let's get into an advertisement. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is brought to you by Blank Screen. It looks like my picture went away. What happened? There it goes. Is that going
to... I don't know. You're flickering. There.
Is it back? Is it gone?
Yeah, there we go. It's back now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees put many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. You can choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8, like Thumbs Up, Android Evolution from Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rick and Morty, which is Rick and Morty as Legos, Bernie Larry 2016, pretty, 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 pretty good from Curb Your Enthusiasm, or Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, which would probably break my phone if I were to try to use those. To help keep our podcast free, order your Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, and then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Cool.
All right, I'm done. Oh, where's my Twitter? Stop. Go away. Don't show my Twitter. All right. Problem with screen sharing. Okay. Comic news. Looks like Marvel is going to be launching a Daredevil Punisher crossover coming in May, and this will coincide with the Daredevil series premiering on Netflix with the Punisher appearance. Did either of you guys see the ads for the new season of Daredevil? It has the Punisher logo hidden in the background.
Really? You mean print ads? Or
yeah, the print ads.
I think I did, but it's been a while.
It's like a blue full page. Actually, I've got comics sitting here. I should be able to grab one.
In this week's books?
Yeah. Let me flip through here real quick. Yep, here it is. All right, so we've got this. There's the Daredevil ad, and it shows you all the different cast members that are in the show. Of course, Netflix. But if you look real close, you can see there's the Punisher eyes, the Punisher nose, and the teeth.
Absolutely. Down.
So you've got that Punisher logo just hiding in the background there. It's a pretty nice piece of artwork, really.
I see it. It is cool.
All right. All-New Wasp has been revealed. The Alex Ross illustration scheduled to be the cover of May's All-New All-Different Avengers number 9 will show the All-New Wasp. Who is she? What is she? And what does she intend to do about Earth's Mightiest Heroes?
All right.
Hey, that's what it says. I'm just reading the text here. It's on my screen. Kevin Maguire boards Howard the Duck for issue number 7. The guy who did Justice League International and formerly known as the Justice League will be doing some work on Howard the Duck number 7.
Wow.
Yeah. This next story, I don't know, it just says foreshadowing those Civil War II spoilers, and then it doesn't say anything.
Well, no, that's because there was more. It's more to see because there were some comic panels in there. There's basically some, I guess, almost spoilerific stuff from Iron Man, Invincible Iron Man 6 that might be foreshadowing some things in Civil War 2, and that's all that needs to say about that, because like there's a bunch of comic panels for the most part. But the next one should cover some ground.
Okay. So Mary Jane dons the armor on Invincible Iron Man number 9 cover. So Civil War 2 heats up this spring. Mary Jane Watson will cross paths with Tony Stark in Invincible Iron Man 9, and from the looks of a newly revealed cover, she could be trying on an Iron Man suit for the first time. Newsarama unveiled the cover along with the following solicitation text saying, Tony and Rhodey are best friends on and off the battlefield, but their friendship is tested in ways it never was before, as the new power players in the Marvel Universe reveal themselves in a bloody and dangerous fashion that threatens everything they stand for. A Civil War 2 prologue story.
Do not kill Rhodey. I will be pissed off if you do that. That's all I'm gonna say. And Rhodey was right. I don't even know what's going on in that book yet. I'm sorry.
All right, Veronica Fish takes over Archie as the new regular artist. Fiona Staples did the initial 3-issue arc, but apparently she is gone and out of there. So, Veronica Fish. I don't know. Who's Veronica Fish? Does it say?
I might not have put it in there, but I think it says later on in the article.
Sorry, Veronica Fish.
Was she related to Abe Vigoda?
He
was
Sorry.
Well, I know she's done some Archie work, but yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really say what else she's done.
All right, we've got the Dwayne McDuffie Award for Diversity nominees for Long Beach Comic Expo. This is the 2nd annual Dwayne McDuffie Award for Diversity in Comics. Nominees are Andre the Giant, Closer to Heaven by Brandon Easton and Dennis Meadry. Fresh Romance, edited by Janelle Asalin?
I think it's Asalin.
No, it's not Asalin. It can't be Asalin.
I think. I don't know. I don't
How dare you?
I apologize. Nah, hey, I apologize to her if it's wrong.
Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur by Brandon Montclair, Amy Reeder, and Nacha Bustos. Ms. Marvel by G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. And Zayna by Gene Barker and Joey Granger.
Probably okay. The only one I haven't heard on that list.
This is the last one.
So Andre the Giant, is because he's French, does that make him diverse?
It might be the creators.
Oh!
Yeah, because Brandon Eaton's black, so... Yeah.
I thought maybe, you know, they count French as like it's
although,
you know, like a special.
Well, you know, maybe they count giant.
Oh, giant, yes. In comics.
But, you know, hey, good luck to everybody.
They've got Little People, Big World, but they never have Big People, Little World. How come we haven't seen that show? All right.
And they go, hey, wait, before you go on, have any of you read that? Because I know you are a wrestling fan.
Yeah, Andre the Giant. Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
I read parts of it.
It was good, but it definitely, when it got towards his WWE career, it focused much more on his career and not his personal life. Mm-hmm. Like, so much of the book was his personal life. Point, yeah. And then it's like, oh, he's wrestling Hulk Hogan, and it's WrestleMania, and it's Survivor Series, and, you know, and on with all the wrestling storylines, but he didn't really do much with who he actually was. So that was the only problem I had with it. Otherwise, you know, it was good stuff. Especially if you're not familiar with his early years, because he was really big for a long time before WWE.
Right.
But history gets rewritten, you know, afterwards. Mm. All right, Scott Snyder has confirmed he is leaving Batman with issue 51, but we all know that he's going to Detective. But I guess he didn't say he's going to Detective. He just confirmed he's leaving Batman.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Apparently we're getting some changes in Superman 50 with Superman meeting his pre-Flashpoint version.
Right, I think that was the original solicitation for the story, or at least very early solicits, and now it's been changed so that it wraps up this Savage, what is it? The Vandal Savage story?
Savage Dawn?
Savage Dawn.
Okay. So instead of meeting the Superman from Lois and Clark,
right,
it's part of that Savage Dawn. I see. Okay, well, I'm fine. I'm not freaking out yet. I'll freak out later.
I said yet.
Archer and Armstrong introduces a ninja nun for hire.
Okay.
Debuting in today's A&A, the Adventures of Archer and Armstrong teaser from our friends at Valiant.
That's right.
It's none other than
Archer's
stepsister, Mary Maria, currently serving as the leader of a monastic order of ninja nuns called the Sisters of Perpetual Darkness. You know, okay, wait. I'm gonna go somewhere. This week saw the launch of Badger number 1 from Devil's Due First Comics, which is a relaunch of an old series that was from either Eclipse Comics or the old First Comics, I don't remember. But in Badger, in the original series, they had a character named Sister Twister, who was a butt-kicking nun, who was basically looked like you know, the old mean lady that would run the orphanage, that would, you know, beat up Oliver Twist for asking for more porridge.
And or the penguin from Blues Brothers.
Right.
Oh, no.
And she was a butt-kicking machine. And so Ninja Nun for Hire being revealed on the same day the Badger comes out. I'm smelling a conspiracy here. I'm going to go out there and say it, that there is some conspiracy going on with ass-kicking women of the Catholic Church. I don't know what it is, but there's something there.
I mean, there's a long history of that in movies and whatnot, so sure, you know.
All right. Now anyone can be the Black Panther as long as they're age 4 to 6. ahead of the new Captain America Civil War movie, there's some new merchandise being created for the kids alongside it, including, I guess, apparently a Black Panther costume for small children. Sure. But no adult costume for Black Panther?
There probably is, but...
It'll probably be dropped around Halloween time.
Yeah.
Because if kids dress up as a costume, if a 6-year-old puts on a costume and runs around in July, it's no big deal. But if I do it, suddenly police are called. I don't understand how that works.
I mean, given some news in the last couple of weeks, yeah, that's probably true.
And finally here, Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor have announced that Starfire is being canceled at DC.
Right. Which, from this article, it basically said that, yeah, they only had plans for 12 issues anyway, and it was going to, and they were not going to be on the book anymore. Right. Yeah, so it was pretty much written already, like when they made the deal, and wherever she shows up next, which sounds like she will, is going to be wherever, and then they have another project coming up. So,
Agent 70, it's time for you to do your plug.
Alrighty, this is our next ad read for tonight. This is for Amazon.com. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit CSPN.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, comics, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment. Chang chang! That helps keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. If you shop at Amazon often, remember to bookmark the link or add it as your homepage so that you can help the CSPN each time you order. We thank you for your support.
All right. Well, now we can do some comic book reviews.
Comic book reviews.
Anybody want to get started? Anybody have a book that they're just chomping at the bit to get to?
Not so much. I had like a fairly, you know, up and down reading experience this week.
So. All right. I'm going to pull one out then. I'm going to start with one. And Agent 70, I want you to tell me why you hated Batman this week.
All right. So this is the big book of the week, I think, because this is leading straight into I'll ring the bell, but I think everyone knows what's coming. Leading into the reemergence of Bruce Wayne as Batman. And what I think threw me off when I was reading this book were the repeated references to the various iterations of Batman throughout the DC multiverse. And, you know, it was just, it proved to be more of a distraction than an addition to the book and the reading experience for me. So, you know, that was really the biggest detractor for me. And I really kind of lost a lot of interest in what was happening because I just wanted to flip past that as soon as possible to get to the climax of the story, which we all know. We just know that, this is the end result of this whole storyline, and all this other stuff that was hinted at and just kind of, you know, thrown into like a splash page. While I understand it may very well be a reference to something that may happen in the future or is just another part of the DC multiverse, especially with the white costume, gold Batman, ultimately for me it just proved to be a distraction. I like the depth of the character study of Alfred actually in this because it's been hinted at before, but he actually, spoiler alert, you know, keeps referring to Bruce as his son, and he doesn't want to see him suffer anymore as a father would. So, you know, we get to the point at the end where, you know, Alfred can't do it, and someone else has to come in and do it for him, and what that it is push Bruce to the point where he is rebooting himself.
See, for me, I liked the story more because it took those crazy stories that we've gotten the last couple of years about those random future versions of Batman, and we finally got the reason why they were there to begin with. And because they were part of his psyche, because he had a dream, basically. He had a dream of these future versions of himself throughout history.
Versions of himself.
Well, but the idea was that as he would die, and then there would always be a clone, and it would have his memories implanted on it, and then Bruce Wayne would always continue, Batman would always continue. It was the way to make sure that there was always a Batman, the legacy kept going. And because this issue was the breaking down of a psyche, rebooting his psyche, going to where he had those visions and following through with that part of the story, suddenly all of those weird offshoot, you know, I don't remember if they were like Future's End or if they were in the annual or where they popped up, but I remember them popping up in weird places, and it just seemed like funky filler stuff that didn't have any reason to be there. Suddenly it was part of the story. Like, suddenly that was part of the reason why we're where we're at today, is because of that weird funky stuff that we saw before that didn't seem to have any purpose.
Is this Snyder mumbo jumbo?
I think it is, but I think that makes it awesome.
I mean, maybe it's because I haven't been following Batman as closely as you have to pick up on that particular aspect of the story, because I did not know that what I guess in my mind started as an aspect of the Batman Beyond cartoon. Do you remember that, Dirt, where, you know, they talked about how Bruce Wayne had kind of created a system so that his DNA would be passed on, and, you know, like the Batman, it would always be a Batman in Gotham City, and I guess that was picked up on in this.
Yeah, and I guess that would make sense with them bringing Batman Beyond back into the DC Universe proper,
right,
with Future's End and all of that. But, I mean, you can say that this is Snyder mumbo-jumbo in the same way we had the Hickman mumbo-jumbo, because I really liked the way the Hickman stories would take snippets of something that happened a year before, 2 years before, that didn't seem like that big of a deal, and now rework it in as being a key part of the storyline.
Right.
That's the same thing that Snyder has done here. Some of the stuff that you've seen in the past that you thought, you know, like the Future's End, I think it was the Detective Comics Future's End one, was this random, you know, Batman part of the League of Assassins in the future, and like this weird desert world, and you're like, well, why the heck am I reading this? Like, that was interesting, I guess, but this doesn't seem to have anything to do with the story. And now we see, well, it does. It did have part of the story. Maybe not as this is the actual future of Bruce Wayne, but this is the vision that he had of the future and how he was working to make that vision come true. And whether he succeeds or not is a different story and a different question, which, of course, it never does, but the fact that he was able to take those things and work them into the story and make them quote-unquote real is what I really enjoy about the story. And I've enjoyed, you know, Geoff Johns did that with Green Lantern, with all of his Green Lantern stuff. He'd pull the most random, you know, 70s crazy backup from an annual story and turn it into one of the key moments in Green Lantern history. And, you know, Hickman was doing it with his Avengers run. Snyder's doing it here on Batman. That's the stuff I like, where the longtime readers who have, you know, gone through everything are getting rewarded with these payoffs to these old storylines.
Gotcha.
So for me, this is, I mean, we're opening
this
up
the payoff. Right.
We're opening up the show, but this is easy for me. This was my click of the week.
Okay.
Nice.
I said it was melodramatic to a fault.
You're fired.
Ah!
All right, who else wants to go?
Anyone?
Bueller?
Well, you want to stick to DC, or?
Sure, I mean, whatever.
Do you have another DC book that you read this week?
I don't have any DC books, actually. But, okay.
All I have is Batman 49.
Okay, well. Okay,
well, I know Tim has something on.
Yeah, he's got a couple. Suicide Squad and Red Hood Arsenal.
Yeah, didn't really say that much about him. But new Suicide Squad number 17, he said that the art was a highlight for him. And
Red Hood Arsenal number 9.
Yeah, Red Hood Arsenal number 9.
He knows that they changed the colorist, and he could tell frowny face.
That's
frowny
face.
That is a weird thing to pick up on, but that's something that we've actually talked about colorists quite a bit over the last year.
Sure.
And it's a weird thing to pick up when a colorist switches on a book, but I have noticed Like Cyborg, the last issue of Cyborg, the colorist on that was not as dynamic and vivid as we've seen on that book, and it really did, in my mind, hurt the book to have the colorist that wasn't as detail-oriented as what we've seen. I did feel it kind of took away, and I don't know if color is color is the new big thing that in the comic book industry.
I was going to say, as long as it's not changed for the sake of the story. If it's just changed because, you know, it's just a different person, you know, because of personnel and the artist, you know, let's say the penciler and the inker have remained constant, but the colorist is changing, and the, you know, the colorist's the change in colorist, you know, creates a different dynamic for the book. Did I just erase Tim's notes on that?
Yeah, just hit undo. It's all good.
It's freaking hysterical.
Control Z. Hit Control Z and it undo your. It undoes or it undoes.
It does. Aha! So, you know, anyone who's following along with the show notes just saw me fix my doo-doo. But
one thing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, ultimately, you know, I think the point that we've been emphasizing is that coloring as it's developed under the computer coloring age has really gotten to influence the look of the art, you know, and the depth and the quality of it. So, you know, we've come to appreciate it more.
Yeah, and I guess as we have seen with the examples we have, it does make a difference, because if you're used to one style and if you're actually paying attention to it, then, yeah, if it changes all of a sudden, like, I thought we've had plenty of instances where it was like, well, the art has changed, and you could tell because it's a totally different art style and, you know, color is different, and, you know, whether it was done for stylistic purposes or just because the person wasn't there or something, it does make a difference. And even with the coloring, because you can notice some things that are off or better.
Sure enough. Depending
on which way it goes.
I did also read Batman Superman this week. This was another DC book. The story that's been going on in Batman Superman has been outside of the current continuity of Batman and Superman. So this is fully powered Clark Kent. This is Bruce Wayne as Batman. And this was your giant alien dies in space. Superman and Batman go to investigate. You've got crazy sci-fi elements. You've got funny, witty banter between the two characters. This has just been a fun, you know, good story between Batman and Superman. We got an appearance of Lobo in this issue, and it's funny because they made Lobo, his appearance in this one is kind of a mash of the classic Lobo character and that new Lobo that they tried to reboot and bring out, and they kind of smudged them together, so you're not really sure which Lobo this is supposed to be, and this may be the new status quo. I don't know that you know, the new hipster Lobo just now has wild hair, so he can pass for the old Lobo if you need him to, but goodness, he can be the new Lobo if you want him to. But it's a good story. It's a good, you know, kind of classic superheroes. This is one of those stories where you see Batman is the smartest guy in the room. Superman is, you know, the most powerful being in the universe, but he has his limitations. And I really like the story that they've got going. But it's worth pointing out that we have more awesome Neil Adams variant covers. And these are recreations of some of his most famous classic covers for these new books. And the one for Batman and Robin is showing...
Batman Superman.
Or for Batman Superman is showing Robin as being Batman's junkie sidekick.
Jeez.
Like we got in the Green Arrow...
Flash.
Yeah. So I love this cover. I just love...
No, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, I mean.
Yeah. Green Arrow, Green Lantern was with Speedy. Was it Speedy?
Correct.
Who was the junkie? Yeah. So we got that. There was also one with the Batman book.
Yeah, it was a riff on Dead Man. There's a Dead Man image. I actually picked that one up this week, physical copy. So it's you know, it's pretty apropos to what's happening in the story.
But all of these variants, these Neil Adam variants, are just fantastic. And Marvel actually has some Neil Adam variants this month as well, except their variants are, I believe, 1 in 25, so you have to order 25 copies to get one Neil Adams variant, whereas the DC ones were just open to order. So if your store wanted to order 50 copies of the Batman Neil Adams variant and none of the regular covers, they could have done that. So these are much easier to find than the Marvel ones. May be all I have for DC.
All right. Well, then, if that's the case, you got anything about Agent 70, DC?
No, all I read was Batman.
Okay. Well, then, let's go to Star Trek, Starfleet Academy number 3. Get that one out of the way.
Okay.
So we have a continuation of the story where it's in two different... Well, it's in like 3 years apart. We have the crew that we know from the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, still as cadets. Uhura's trying to look into some... A ship that went missing about 100 years prior, which led to the formation of Starfleet. And then on the other side of that, we also have a competition 3 years later with some cadets, including one named Talon, a Vulcan named Talon, who's in this competition between, I guess, rival academies like the Vulcan Academy, the Andorians, blah, 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 everybody else. As far as the Talon part of the story is, everybody on the team is doing all right, with the exception of Talon, who does well, but she was kind of distracted because she's also kind of torn. But she's saying she wants to go home after go to New Vulcan after the conversation is over because she feels like she needs to be, you know, with the remnants of her people. And at the same time, you know, she doesn't seem like she's a fit for Starfleet, and we get a little bit of backstory into why she's there in the first place, you know, and also more into why she wants to go home. And that part of the story ends with them kind of have a group project to do where they have to go out into space in a shuttle for some reason. We don't know why, but I'm sure that will come out next issue. On the Uhura part, she's still digging into what's going on. She finds her and Kirk break into a classified section, which is kind of funny because it's like Uhura meets up with this one guard, gets caught by this one guard, and then starts trying to make something up. And then Kirk comes along and says, "Hey, how you doing? We need to use a terminal." And the guard's like, "All right, sure, Jimmy." Let's, you know, because he knows pretty much everybody in Starfleet or whatever. He's cool with everybody. So Uhura gets into an idea to where she wants to, you know, everybody needs to know about what happened to the ship, because the ship that in question was in some kind of anomaly that it couldn't get out of, and there was a mutiny on the ship by one of the crew, and Uhura wants to let this be known. So what happens is she ends up going to, I guess, Starfleet Council, whoever it was, and they talk about, hey, they don't want this out because one of the crew members was the son of one of the founding admirals or something like that, and that was the person who was bringing about the mutiny, which would put a blight on Starfleet's, you know, history. So I think at the end of that story, we kind of get to where they're come to an understanding about it, and I think Spock shows up some kind of way. But outside of that, it was a pretty good read. Like I said, I don't know if it's going to have any reaching outcomes with any, you know, movies coming out, or if anything's going to come to the other book, I guess, later on, because it seemed like they're kind of setting this up for something, but I'm not sure what. Or it just could be a one-off story, who knows. But it's okay.
Yeah, and I did read, I read 1 and 2, and then I got about halfway through 3 before the show tonight, and I didn't get a chance to finish it. But the one thing that struck me is that the artwork in this is so, it's so simplified.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to what we get in the regular Star Trek books, this feels much simpler and much, I don't even know how to put it beyond that. It's just more like kid-friendly. It almost looks like a cartoon, I guess, is the easiest way to say that.
Cartoony.
But, yeah.
Like if it was an all-ages book, it would fit right in.
Ah, that's
right, exactly. But at the same time, Kirk looks like Kirk. And right. Uhura looks like
Chris,
like you,
Chris Pine. Kirk?
Yes, the likenesses are still there. Every character looks like, you know, the actor or actress in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't lose any of that feeling like you're actually looking at these people from the movie. But it is a much more simplified, almost like the original animated series that they did, you know, after the TV show was canceled. I don't know if there's some correlation there, if that's what they were going for, or if that's just kind of like this happy coincidence that happened with this artist, but. It just, to me, it's very interesting how different it looks, and yet it still feels, you know, familiar and feels connected.
Right. I didn't even think about TES. You're right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What else we got?
Let's see. Real quick. Oh, Shaft, Imitation of Life.
You're damn right.
This is a potential click of the week.
Nice.
It takes place... I want to say it takes place after the last arc of the Shaft book, but I don't remember... It's been a while since I don't remember the exacts of that one. But it does takes place a couple of months after Shaft finds the daughter of this kind of big shot in Harlem, or where he is at this point, because it doesn't necessarily say Harlem, but you can kind of pretty much, that's where he worked out of. He was laying low for a while, but now he's started taking cases again to kind of get back into the world after that case wrapped up. he's taken another case involving, and you have to consider this, this was around 1970s time, involving some parents trying to find their son who left him because supposedly, as we initially get, was neglecting him or whatnot, but what it comes to find out is he was gay, and at the time, that was something you didn't really talk about at the time. Mm-hmm. And nobody else would take the case, so for some reason, Shaft decided to take it, you know, and even though he felt he shouldn't, but, you know, he been a good guy, you know, then he does that. He goes for some leads. He goes to this one bar in a spot and answers some people. Finds this one guy who's seen the kid they're looking for, and then they go to the other place where they were going to try to find the kid. And then they get into a alley fight with some people because, you know, again, you know, it, and the bar they were just in was a gay bar, so the people that attacked them were pretty much bigots. They took care of that, and the other kid that the Shaft was with got hurt, and they took him back to his office, patched him up, and they started talking a little bit, and that's where the issue ends. Except for you see a couple of side shots where you see the other kid that they're looking for looks like shooting up dope, and it seems like he may be no longer in the picture or just severely compromised. Wanted to do, but we won't find that out until the next issue. Like, I am, so far as the books keeps the tone of Shaft, and the artwork is great. You know, David Walker is who did the last arc is doing this with the writing, and like you can tell, who's also done some Shaft art, Shaft novels. You know, he has put the time and the work into this, and it's a great read because you're basically telling it from Shaft's inner monologue, which apparently has not been done in any of the novels, any of the old novels rather. But it's a nice take on it, and it seems true to the character.
Cool.
If you're a fan of Shaft, pick this up. You'll appreciate it.
Cool.
Okay. Let's see.
Can we move over to Marvel?
Actually, let me throw one out real quick. Okay. We're down towards this part of the alphabet. We have Tinker, number one. This is from Overground Comics. This is the same comic book company we talked about a couple weeks ago that did Plus Ultra, number one. And in this book, you've got a young girl who's an inventor who creates these power gauntlets that's supposed to give her, you know, almost like Iron Man repulsors that she's trying to build. The problem is every time she uses them, she passes out. And so there's a comedic tone to the book. The artwork that you see here on the cover is basically what it looks like on the inside. It's much more of a cartoony, funny type look to it. But it is set in the same universe as the other books. So there's a company, Hero Corp, and they are the ones who basically, you know, turn people into superheroes, give them powers, augment their abilities, whatever. And she is too young to go through the process, so she is trying to create her own weapons to be her own superhero. And somehow she stumbles into some sort of underground people trying to be their own heroes without going through this, you know, corporation, whatever. So it's set in the same universe. It ties into the other books that have come out from this company, but it's a much lighter book. It is geared more towards younger readers. It's got a good premise to it. The artwork is fun to look at. So it's another good book that's come out of this company that's worth taking a look at if you're interested in checking out this new universe of characters.
Cool. All right.
Let's go to Marvel.
Yeah, let's.
Who read some Marvel books?
I read some Marvel books.
Alphabetically, what's the first one you read? Alphabetically.
Oh, that would probably be Darth Vader then. So Darth Vader number 16.
Is it 16?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
And it is. It's my notes.
Start of a new arc. Hey, you remember that planet that was brought up and created in the Star Wars? Darth Vader's annual.
Well, I sure do.
Well, we revisit it here in this book.
Yay.
So basically, the Emperor tasks Vader to go to this planet, and actually, I'm not sure, because it was, well, I guess you're basically saying, hey, look, they're slipping up, so we need to get them back on track again, so you go and take care of things. And there's also some kind of,
There's like a small rebellion or something. An insurrection. Insurrection's a good word, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Vader is sent there to kind of crush that also, because, you know, the queen that was installed is widely known to be, you know, an Empire's pawn, and she's trying to say keep faith in front of her people, and Vader's coming in here like, no, you're gonna do what we're gonna say. all the while, you know.
And it's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, basically. And it's like, well, we're going to go over here and take care of this and crush these rebels. You know, you do what you got to do. And then she has to come along because apparently her sister, who was the, I guess, who was the head of the War Department or whatever, is dead because, you know, Vader had him killed, and her father, who was the king. So she has to go because she has to fill the queen has to fill up all the roles that was that her family was taken care of because of this. So that's why we find her, you know, talking to with Vader or pleading, trying to plead with Vader. They're attacking the rebels, and the place where they're held up apparently is some, it's not sacred, but it's some old place, some ancient place.
It's like an ancient mining
right
colony right. platform thing that's been there for hundreds of years.
Exactly, but not anymore because Vader had it destroyed, because apparently one of the people that was with Vader had planted some explosives, and the explosive went off, and that was a big oopsie because apparently the charge was too strong than what they needed, and the place got destroyed. So I'm trying to remember something else happened.
Well, I liked the issue, but I mm-hmm. felt like it was mostly set up for this new arc.
Right. Yep.
And you have the hunt for Dr. Aphra. He's bounty hunters mm-hmm. to track her down. And so,
well, she got captured.
She got captured by the rebels. Right.
Right. So Vader's sending some bounty hunters to go and get her or kill her, one of the two, at the end of the book.
And so I enjoyed it overall, but it felt like, you know, this is a lot of setup for what's going to happen in the future. It didn't feel like it was necessarily, you know, a lot that happened that was key in this particular issue, but it was still fun to read.
Well, it definitely reads like the first issue in a much longer story because they introduce it as such. And, you know, the story title is The Shu-Torun War. So that's not something you expect to be wrapped up in a single issue.
Yeah. I was reading this on digital, and I just flipped through it, the physical copy that I bought and saw this, and I couldn't help but go, dun, 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 dun.
Good job, girl.
I always wonder, when they do something like that, are they taking away story pages in order to put those two pages of text on there? Or is that, like, do we get two bonus pages?
Oh, right. Did it count as one page?
Yeah, I was about to say we have to go through and do a page count.
Because we might have just gotten, you know, we just got ripped off of 50 cents in our book there.
But I suspect, you know what, even if they did take away a couple of pages, there wasn't much about the story that would have, I don't think, would have made it any better by adding two pages. Because it was just kind of like, well, I mean, true, but it's just like, hey, this is what's going on, and we're going to keep going with this, you know?
Shout out again, I wanted to note, because I think we always do, shout out again to Sal LaRocca, who continues to churn out quality art on this book, makes it, you know, the most consistent Star Wars read out there.
And by the way, for the people on audio, the page I was holding up was a two page with a title, with the title of the arc, as Agent 70 was mentioning.
Yeah, I guess we do have to kind of remember that there are people listening to the audio only. But hey, that's what you get. You got to come watch the live show. Don't just listen to the podcast. Check out the video.
Exactly. Be on YouTube.
That's right.
It's good stuff.
It's archived.
Yeah. All right.
But that's pretty much it. That is it for Vader.
All right. So no one for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., All New, All Different Avengers, All New Hawkeye?
I read All New, All Different Avengers. I'll speak very quickly on it. In this issue, it's more of a continuation of what the overall story in this book is, which is developing the dynamic between the current version of the three of the big three of the Avengers, namely Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man, and the new kids on the block. You know, not Donnie Wahlberg and I forget all the other people and Kids on the Block.
All the others. And Joey the Fat One.
Oh no, I don't know. I don't think that's the right group.
But is it the right?
But anyway, what I mean, oh no, God. It's always a Pandora's box around here. But between the big three and the rookies, we'll call them, Ms. Marvel, Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and Nova. So, you know, we open with a pretty amusing scene of fan fiction being written by Kamala Khan. But what we see developing in the story is more of what Wade is trying to develop as like a mystery within the first few story arcs of All New, All Different Avengers, which is that Vision is not what he seems or is not what we presume him to be. and he may very well be a subversive aspect, you know, a character in the story. You know, we have a pretty perfunctory scene against, was it Equinox? I don't recall this character at all, but they pluck this particular character out of thin air, and they tease the appearance of one of the classic Avengers villains who we last saw in Uncanny Inhumans, and that is namely Kang the Conqueror. There's a tease of that, and we have a cliffhanger of a last page involving the new Thor. So this was, you know, this basically read as, you know, the next chapter in the saga of this iteration of the Avengers. Definitely not new reader friendly, because I think you do need to have read or be familiar with what the current status quo is of the Avengers before reading this to be comfortable with the story and and reading this from front to back.
So, question: does the cover has any significance to the insides?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh.
Where's the drama? There we go. All right. Did anyone read Black Knight number 4?
You know, I've got it. I just didn't get to it in time.
Right. I won't spoil too much. I think it has been announced that Black Knight is coming to an end with issue number 5.
Yes. Yep.
So, this is the penultimate issue, and it definitely did not read as such. Frank Thierry did not, I don't believe, develop this particular story arc to end in 5 issues, you know, to end with the next issue. We have some weird developments in this portion of Weird World between the Uncanny Avengers and New Avalon. You know, basically, Dane Whitman, the story is that Dane Whitman has made his way to Weird World and has created a New Avalon there and has taken over a portion of Weird World and conquered a portion of it and created his own little fiefdom. The Uncanny Avengers have come to take him in because he's committed some atrocities that were detailed in the first few issues. And now what we have here is something of a bargain is struck between the forces of New Avalon and the Uncanny Avengers to kind of help treat the psychoses that Dane Whitman seems to be experiencing. And that is the key... You know, the key part of the story where we leave, you know, where we find ourselves at the end of the story with this bargain that's been struck, and it involves, spoiler alert, separating the Black Knight from his ebony blade. And if you're familiar with the mythology of this character in the Marvel Universe, you have an understanding of what that might mean. Again, this story does not read like it is the penultimate chapter in this in the story. So it kind of sucks that Thierry's book and his run on The Black Knight is coming to a premature end. But ultimately, I think we all agree that the Weird World push is kind of, you know, out of left field. I know you guys aren't sports guys, but you know, that I think we know what that
left means. Left field. I don't get that. Is that a soccer reference?
Anyway, it's coming a bit out of nowhere. So this is one casualty of the Weird World push.
Have we gotten any news of an appearance of the Black Knight after this? Do we have him showing up in solicits for Uncanny Avengers or anything?
Or Weird World, for that matter?
I'm sorry? In terms of Black Knight?
Yeah.
Is he going to show up anywhere after this?
I am not 100% sure. I have not seen. But Weird World is still ongoing. It has its own ongoing still.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, like you said, Weird World, this push for Weird World came out of nowhere. And it's in all these different books. And... Black Knight, I never planned on reading. It just was sitting there with no one reading it, so I went ahead and read it, and I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. So I'm sad to see it go, but I understand that I'm probably one of the, like, what is it, 25 people
the select
that
buy few, Black Knight. Yes. Yeah, so. The select few.
It is what it is.
So I think Dirt mentioned that he also read Old Man Logan number 2 this week.
It did?
That's
way down at the end of the alphabet. Now I got
to... All right, fine,
there we go. No, I found it. I got it. All right.
I was like, fine.
All right, all the way through the end of the books here, there is Old Man Logan. This was actually a contender for Click of the Week for me.
Nice.
I love this book. I really do. The violence in this book is just is so heartwarming for me. it makes it so lovable. Again, we've got brilliant artwork here.
Andrea Sorrentino.
Yes, thank you. The artwork in this is so good, and it goes beyond just, you know, the things that we spotlighted before, where wherever there's violence, the lighting changes. The artwork has this scratchy, kind of dirty feel to it, which fits a character like Old Man Logan. But there's a lot of other stuff going on the page that Sorrentino brings to the table, especially like the opening page where you've got this, you have this visual effect of it scrolling down past a full moon, and you've got the dialogue going, and it makes sense when you get to the bottom panel of why it's laid out this way. Mm-hmm. You've got cows. There are cows in this story. I won't explain to you how or why.
It's very twister.
But there's a page where all of the panels are insets in cow shapes.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that you would never expect to see, but as soon as you see it, you're like, oh, that is cool. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a lot of extra thought that goes into the artwork on this book.
And laying out that particular page of panels, yeah.
Yeah. So, I just really have to just say how much I enjoy the artwork. But the story as well, Old Man Logan is trying to stop his future from happening. And in his future, Bruce Banner was, like, the key bad guy of his area. His offspring were allowed to run wild, and they were the ones that basically terrorized everybody. So he feels he has to destroy Bruce Banner in order to keep that timeline from, becoming real. And so when he sees the Incredible Hulk, he goes in for an attack on Hulk, only to find out that, of course, now, surprise, Bruce Banner is not the Hulk these days. It is Amadeus Cho. And I love the way that Lemire writes this fight where you get what's going through Logan's head, and Logan is basically explaining why he's doing his different attacks. You know, he's attacking the leg, he's making sure he's distracted, he goes for this move, he's going to come up behind him and try this, and, you know, on and so forth. And it makes it so much more than a lot of times we get a fight between two characters and you just see, you know, it's a punch, and then he throws them through a building, and then they fall into the sewer, and then he picks up a car and throws it, and this actually gives it much more of a context of explaining why he's doing certain attacks and how he's trying to break him down. And then when he comes to the eventual revelation that this is not Bruce Banner, then that changes the course of the story. So I just enjoy... and then even at the end, he goes to... I'm trying not to spoil here, but he goes to meet an old friend... And he does.
If you're familiar with the original Old Man Logan story,
right? And when he goes to meet this friend, it doesn't say who it is, but suddenly the panel layout changes, mm-hmm. and the panel layout
and a particular guest star appears.
Yes, exactly.
Before the cliffhanger page, a particular guest star appears. And if you're familiar with this character's book that this character appeared in, this guest star, you know exactly who it is. So
yeah, so a lot of great things came together in this issue. Yeah. Like I said, this almost was my click of the week, but you know, Batman just barely edged it out. But between the two, these were both phenomenal reads.
Cool. So I'm assuming they're still going with the parts of Old Man Logan originally, right? So I guess Maestro is the Hulk he was up against?
Yeah, like he still remembers everything from his timeline.
Right.
So the whole purpose of this book is him trying to stop that future from happening. Yes. And he understands that, you know, like the first guy he fights is the Butcher, which is this small, D-list supervillain.
Right. Who kind of became opportunistic, you know, right. in that nightmare future.
But he takes him out, but he understands, he has this feeling that even though he's taken him out, that may not be enough to alter the future. Like someone else could always, you know, take this guy's place because he wasn't that important. So he does have to go after these bigger characters that are more important to actually changing. You know, he's got to get the sports almanac away from Biff in order to make sure that his mom never becomes the prostitute at the casino, you know, whatever. So so I like the way that it's also playing with those, you know, time travel ideas. He's, even though there's never the sense that he's ever going to get back to his timeline, he's going to make sure that it never happens in the first place.
Gotcha. Damn shame what happened to the cow.
Don't spoil it. I guess that's a trigger warning for all the humane.
Oh, stop it.
Anyway.
All right, so Guardians of the Galaxy number 5. Let's get away from that. Let's see.
Well, Tim actually had a note about this book.
Oh, okay.
He says that he is really enjoying Guardians of the Galaxy since All New, All Different Marvel started.
And that is true. There are parts of this book that continue to be pretty good. I did not have the initial familiarity with Yotat, but I don't like him. Yeah, that's
you not like him, like he's a villain, so you're not supposed to like him, or do you not
no,
like him?
He's
a bad character,
and then he's stupid, and he's a bad character.
Stupid name, too.
You know, you
heard me, Bendis.
You know, I guess you got to do something. But so what we have here is at the end of the fight with whoever the Kree was, and at the end of the last issue, they're still trying to get Spartax back together, and then Yotak comes and attack everybody. So then there's that fight, which ends up getting wrapped up quickly after Quill kind of gives his people some breathing time.
Right, he basically provides a distraction,
mm-hmm.
to give them a chance to recover, and then they regroup and take the fight to Yotat.
Yep.
But then, a surprise group appears.
Exactly.
A surprise group appears. Bear in mind that this combat is happening on nowhere, mm-hmm. the floating head of the Celestial, and what we find is that several characters who have played significant roles in Guardians of the Galaxy stories pre-All New, All Different have come together to form... Spoiler alert.
The Nowhere Core.
No, I'm not familiar with the character whose gauntlets are glowing. Roddy, if you can
help me out. That one I'm not sure, because actually that volume of Guardians, I don't... Because that was all that during Annihilation and all that stuff, and I don't...
Well, see, the thing is, I've read all that, and I don't recognize that character.
Yeah, so I'm not sure where this one came from.
I recognize 4 out of the 5.
Right, yeah. Shout out to Moon Dragon being back.
Yeah, seriously.
And Mantis.
Mantis.
With new costumes. Oh, yeah, shout out to Tim, who was apparently watching, because he forgot to mention the Nowhere Core introduction. So... But yes, we have them come across, which apparently, and there was also Bug, who was, like I said, in an older version of the Guardians, and none of them are too pleased that the Guardians are there.
Right.
Even though they helped them out of the jam, because there was some conversation.
There was definitely some tension.
Yeah.
There was some interpersonal tension there. But what we have here is basically the resolution of the storyline that involves Peter Quill being king of Spartax,
mm-hmm.
and we move forward with a slightly different, with a pretty different status quo coming out of this issue. To me, I think the strength of this particular iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy is the addition of Ben Grimm and the chance for Bendis to really write Ben Grimm as kind of a fun adventurer again.
Yeah. Like, I think Ben becoming a Guardian was probably the best part. It was probably the best thing that happened to this book, because he is pretty much making the book that much better.
Yeah.
Also, Tim just said he just Googled the guy with the gauntlets. His name Prism. That's still not helping, but all right, thanks. I'm going to look that one up.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm going to have to look that guy up.
Because, that's still not familiar. But in that, Quill part seemed looking too convenient to me. Because it was like the council, basically the council that's around him is blaming him for everything that has happened, which he had nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the attack by the Kree, I think his name's Hala, I can't remember. Previously, and then Yotat coming in, like Quill's getting blamed with all of that, and it may sound like you're going to be held accountable for all of this, and Peter was like, well, I was going to quit anyway, so
I was going to say, I think that they've definitely, Bendis laid the seeds for, he already planted the seeds for the backroom deal making and the backstabbing that was going to happen here, that definitely led to Peter Quill basically renouncing his throne. So, that stuff wasn't that big a surprise. The fact that, he kind of gave it up without too much of a fight, I guess doesn't come as much of a surprise either, but I thought he might have, put up a little bit more. But I guess, I guess the point is they want to put him back into space with the Guardians.
Yeah.
And they do tease new scheming and new galactic... plans being hatched by classic Marvel cosmic bad guys.
Oh, yes, the leftovers from the Council during Infinity.
Correct.
Basically. Wait, I just did a little quick search on this Prism person, and I don't know if it's the same person or not. I guess so. This basically was a former Marauder, and it showed up in X-Men books.
I think it's a different Prism.
Yeah, I don't think so, but that's the only one that's kind of showing up. But either way, that doesn't... do that for later. But it looks like, it kind of looks like the same person, judging by some of the things, but whatever. All right, what we got next?
We have Deadpool.
Okay.
Which Deadpool? The regular Deadpool?
Yeah, we'll start with the regular.
Okay, fine.
Because you didn't read it. So
I didn't read it.
All right. First of all, Deadpool was on my chopping block, and this issue saves it for now, but only because this is the 25th anniversary issue. So it is, I don't want to say completely disconnected from the arc that was before this, but it is standalone. It's Deadpool with his little black book of grudges going through trying to find everybody who has wronged him over the years. For instance, he goes to Iron Fist's dojo, and he just kicks down one of the bamboo and rice paper walls, and he's like, "My face does not look like a melted candle. I just thought you should know you look like Elvis Presley had a kid with one of Santa's elves, and Kung Fu is stupid." And then he turns around and walks out. So you just get like all this randomness that has been missing from this Deadpool book over the last few issues. The first arc started out kind of funny, and then by issue 5, there was almost no humor left. Issue 6 was just so terrible. Mm-hmm. But this issue, the story is, it's funny. It's like the classic Deadpool. But then you have 6 backup stories for the different members of his Mercs for Money. And because you have all these different stories back there, this is a $9.99 issue because it is thick. If you've seen some of the books Marvel's put out the last few years where they've taken some of the like 2 or 3 issue miniseries and reprinted them as a single comic, that's about how thick this book is. Mm-hmm. You hold it in your hand, it feels heavy.
Yes.
This is
I'm holding up the hip hop variant cover, which is not on a number one. This is an ode to the Bun B Trill album. I did not know that by heart. I'm actually looking at a screen that's telling me that. So this is another one of a long line of hip-hop variant covers that Marvel is putting out, but in this case, not for a number one issue.
But you didn't read it.
I didn't read it.
You should read it. Go ahead and read it.
Fine.
Because not having read any of the others in this series, you're going to be fine because it is standalone, and the backup stories with the other characters are all... they're all interesting, and they're all written by different writers, which also helps, because you do get a bunch of different voices, a bunch of different artists jumping in there, and so you really feel like you're getting your money's worth with one of these giant books. Yeah, so it was definitely worth a read, even though it was more expensive. I mean, you say $10, and you're like, oh, that's expensive, but if you think about it, your normal comic's 4.
Right.
So this is more than, 2 comics worth plus a dollar. So it's definitely worth it. But there was another Deadpool book this week.
Oy.
And Agent 70, you read this one, right?
I did read this one, and I can definitely say this took me by surprise, complete and utter surprise. If I go back into the archives, audio or video, I definitely said on the show that I was going to get the first issue of Spider-Man Deadpool because the hip-hop cover was the ode to Eric B. and Rakim's classic, seminal hip-hop album, Paid in Full. Now we have issue number 2 of Spider-Man Deadpool, and I am absolutely, absolutely shocked by the fact that I am enjoying the story, that it is absolutely well-written. I was just completely surprised by how much I enjoyed reading this. I was flipping it, shout-out to Joe Kelly. Ed McGuinness's art is, it's definitely serviceable, and at points it's pretty good. Well, listen, it's serviceable. It's, that's like the most neutral thing I can say about it, right? So, ultimately, there's a couple of really cool things that come up in this. Deadpool has a number of moments to shine. Miles Morales makes an appearance in here, and Deadpool kind of says what a lot of us are thinking when Miles first appears in this book. It's still very, very, funny and very well done. Coming from a different perspective, what did you think of this book?
I loved the first issue when it came out, so I was a huge... fan of it, and considering how much humor was missing from the regular Deadpool series, Spider-Man mm-hmm. Deadpool 1 just blew me away with how good it actually was, how funny it actually was. And Spider-Man Deadpool 2, the humor begins on the very first page. On right. your intro page, It starts with Marvel Comics begrudgingly presents Amazing Spider-Man, Deadpool, and the blurb actually starts out with, last time, in a shocking development, Kelly and McGinnis got their collective acts together and put out Spider-Man, Deadpool number one on time. They started 16 years ago. So from the very beginning all the way through to the end, it was fun, it was funny. You do have a shocking story development where Peter Parker has been targeted for assassination because he's apparently this terrible guy, and Spider-Man's like, no, he's not a terrible guy, and Deadpool's like, okay, I guess he's not. Then he goes to do some poking around and finds out...
Right, after the main adventure is done.
Right, after the main adventure, he finds out that maybe Peter Parker is this super bad guy, which of course he's not, but there's something going on in Parker Industries that leads him to think that maybe Peter Parker is a terrible guy.
Right.
It defies expectations in a very good way and provides a very satisfying story that I really just can't wait for the next issue.
Seriously, this is a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me because it took me by surprise, and really, you know, I was very impressed by the execution of the story. And like Dirt said, the final twist to the story makes you want to find out what happens next. And that is a huge, huge thing for a book that, you know, probably, you know, a lot of people are giving short shrift to because of the things that I mentioned earlier that, you know, it's like, you know, what's the point of this, blah, blah, blah. But it's probably one of the more fun Deadpool books because he has a counterpart, a foil in Spider-Man.
But Roddy refuses to read it.
Fine.
Mm. I'm skimming through it.
All right.
Well, let's get to something I actually did read. Illuminati number 4.
Illuminati.
I am still enjoying this book.
Nice.
Why?
We left. Huh? Why? Well, it's... Well, as I said last time, this is kind of a book that seems similar to Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Excuse me. Whereas you see the villain side of things, and while it's not as, which granted I haven't finished reading that particular book, but from what I gathered of it, it was a little lighter tone on, you had some schlubs trying to do a job and just trying to do their thing and roll through. In this case, we kind of have a similar situation, except for the fact that we got the Hood bringing together a bunch of villains, you know, you can call them B, C, list, I don't know where you would put these people. Together for a score in which they go and rob Asgard of a bunch of weapons. And they've had a couple of snags in here, but the plan has still been going. And in this case, at the end of the last issue, they go and hit up a Roxxon base that has this tech that has an artificial rainbow bridge. But when they get there, Thor is there. So in this issue picks up where that leaves off, in that they first start talking to Thor, and Hood's like, well, maybe we can kind of bamboozle her, and she'll think we're on the side of good. That doesn't necessarily go out. Thor and Titania have a fight, and Titania's got kind of powered up, seems like. Like, I think she's gone Kaioken. We don't know. And then that fight ends with Titania coming on top. All the while, the other parts of the crew are trying to get to this bridge, which they do. And then they end up in Asgard, and Mad Thinker betrays the group, which was kind of been seen coming.
Is that a spoiler?
Not really. Because, it's been... Well, it's a spoiler if you haven't read any of the issues. Let's put it that way. Because everybody on the groups kind of have their own reason for being there, and Mad Thinker is not different, you know. So it was kind of an inevitability, and nobody was really shocked about it when it happened. So Mad Thinker got what he wanted and left. That part is probably the spoiler. And as we leave the book, we have... what seemingly be the crew stranded in Asgard because at the end of the fight with Titania and Thor, Thor destroys the machine that was doing the artificial bridge. But somehow Mad Thinker got away. So, and also there was a bomb in Black Ant, which went off at the end of the book.
Right, and there's your cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Cool. It was a good read. The writing's great, and I'm kind of liking how they're portraying Titania, especially because from where she came from to this has kind of been interesting. Like they make her kind of likable to me anyway.
Gotcha. All right. How about we talk about Ms. Marvel number 4?
How about we do that?
So I see that you read this. I read this, and this was a surprisingly kind of in-between issue for me. It's definitely a setup for the next arc. So it has that going for it and against it. You know, there's definitely more developments in Kamala Khan's personal life. What we get here is you know, one of those classic tropes of teenage superheroes. You know, they're trying to balance life, you know, superhero life, school life, and family life all at once. And what I found kind of funny was that this revisits one of the old Silver Age Superman stories where, spoiler alert, and obviously you can extrapolate what's happening in the Ms. Marvel book from this, where Superman builds a bunch of Superman robots to take his place and do things around town so that he can be in multiple places at once. And that's how I remember. I believe it was even like Kurt Swan art. That's how far back I'm going. It might be even Golden Age. Some stuff I read in like reprints, you know, when I was a kid. What happens here is that Bruno finds a way to reproduce some of the golems that that kid Loki created to protect Jersey City prior to Secret Wars, and uses that technology. He uses those recreations to create basically body doubles of Ms. Marvel, and shenanigans go from there. You know, some of the things that you can sort of predict. So we'll see where it goes. But as I said, this is kind of it was a good issue, but it's not the stellar stuff that I'm used to reading from this creative team. I think the artist on this was actually different too, if I'm not mistaken. I think it might have been a number of artists on this. Let me double check the credit page. There is a credit page.
Yeah, it is different. I might have Leon. Right, I'm not sure.
It's Nico Leon as artist. Yeah. So it's not the usual art team of Takeshi Miyazawa and
Alfona.
And Adrian Alfona.
Yeah. Yeah, the book still, the issue still has the charm of the book, so that hasn't changed. But like you said, it is a sort of a new arc, and, you know, the things are going wrong. The Lightning Golem clones, I, for some strange reason, especially at the end of the book, I got a multiplicity vibe from it.
I understand.
Yeah. So.
Did it make a clone of a clone that was a stupid Ms. Marvel?
Kind of. Almost to that point. Yeah. Because... Because what happens is Bruno makes a couple, and then at the end of the book, you see, like, there's, like, 10 more.
Yeah, things have gotten out of hand. Yeah. You know, they haven't explained it, but, yeah, that's kind of what happens. So.
Exactly.
All right, who read New Avengers?
I should have.
I did. Did you
How
read
bad
this?
Was it? No, I don't read.
Oh. Okay. Well, what's funny about this is that we've had this demiurge storyline kind of percolating the entire first six issues of this series, and it's taken six issues to get to this point, and it feels like this finish was anticlimactic and it was kind of rushed, to be perfectly honest. It's hard to say that, you know, something like this that's been developing over six issues kind of rushes to an end, but it does. You know, I can't really say too much without spoiling what happens. But, that's my overall criticism of the book, is that, you know, we get to this point, maybe issue 7 will, show us what the whole point of this was. But basically, the resolution of this demiurge possession of Wiccan / Billy Kaplan was pretty quick, pretty standard fare, and it was not fitting for a story that's taken six issues to tell. So I can tell, that it was very, like I said, anticlimactic from my point of view.
Yikes.
Yeah, this is definitely back on the chopping block, fellas.
Well, there is something to this, because I haven't read it yet, but I also read an article where this kind of comes out, because there is a tie between, I mean, not a tie, but there is a close tie to this and the Ultimates, which I guess we could do next, which is, I was probably going to start up I don't know if we're going to start up like a team up, but it's definitely crossing over into something.
Oh, you mean starting in the next issue?
Probably this one, actually, with the whole, because they mentioned something about an Eternity War.
Ah.
And okay. I think that's what this is kind of starting to go into. But like I said, I haven't read New Adventures, but I have read the Ultimates, if you want to.
Well, I read Ultimates. Go ahead.
Let's jump to Ultimates then.
All right. Well, so here we go with Ultimates out in Wild Space or wherever they are, and they meet up with an old enemy / friend of the Blue Marvel, which I will go ahead and say again, if you have not read the Legend of Blue Marvel miniseries, you should do so. It's good. And while they're out here, Blue Marvel's having flashbacks to the past and his connection with this guy named Anti-Monitor, which was his best friend, Connor.
No, not Anti-Monitor. That's DC.
I'm sorry. Anti-Man. I'm sorry. You are absolutely right. Kill confusion.
Anti-Man is not a feminist.
Exactly. So
all views expressed herein are solely those of Agent Underscore 70.
Well, actually, we don't know. He could be. I don't know because he has some hippie kind of hippie notions. So we don't know. We don't know. But Ant-Man is lost in the negative space or the neutral zone, as Bashir calls it. And the group comes across him. Adam is mad because he was the one, because Ant-Man was the guy who killed his wife. So as you know, revenge starts to set in. Blue Marvel's son happens to show up, who was also lost in the neutral zone and became a cosmic entity, and tries to kind of talk him down conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
Very convenient. Yeah. And at the end of this, they end up knocking out Ant-Man, taking him on the ship, and they're taking him to complete the mission they were originally going to do, which is to get beyond. I guess beyond Omnispace and whatever you... Now, at the end of this issue, we have a conversation between... the newly reformed Galactus and Eternity,
yep,
who wants Galactus to stop this group from getting into what they want because they don't want them to know what they're trying to find out.
Yep.
And I think that's probably where the Eternity War, there may be an old tie to the Eternity War, if that article is to be believed.
Ah, I did not read this article, so that does make some sense.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you actually had to read these together, but it kind of starts to make a little bit more sense now.
Right, it starts to lead the kind of disparate paths together, because as you were mentioning earlier, this is very much a Fantastic Four-esque exploration mission, and it doesn't necessarily lead you to believe that this is going to lead to like a big crossover, you know, something that would be called the Eternity War. You know, I wonder if He-Man will show up.
I think they're still actually doing that that actually.
Exactly. So, you know, in any event, you know, to me...
Ooh, maybe there's a tie between He-Man. They're going to go to the He-Man universe. Yes.
I was just going to say, to me, the biggest draw for me on this book is the Kenneth Rocafort art is very, very sharp. It stays consistent. And, you know, he's got a lot of cool tech designs, you know, in this. I'm not 100% sure where the story is going. If it involves a crossover with New Avengers, then, hey, maybe I'll be able to stick with New Avengers a little longer.
Mm. I also enjoyed the Al Ewing's art. I mean, writing, yes. And who I can't remember if I brought up during your end deliberations. But if I didn't, that was probably an oversight. We probably mentioned him in passing because I think he is probably going to be definitely in the running this year because I like what he does with his writing. And if this Eternity War does actually turn up into be anything and hopefully works out, then that'll just cement that, I'm thinking. But as of right now, we know very little.
All right. Dirk, do you want to hit on book that you're highlighting right now?
I'm on Red Wolf number 3.
I think we're officially in, we're about to hit rapid fire.
Yeah, it's 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock mm-hmm. your time. So, yep. But I actually went back and read Red Wolf 1 and 2 because I realized that this is from Nathan Edmondson, the same guy who did Black Widow, who did Deathlok,
Punisher,
and those were all fantastic books. And so I was actually wondering the other day, whatever happened to him? What is he doing? Oh, he's doing Red Wolf. Well, I originally had no interest in Red Wolf because I thought it was going to be set in the, was 1872?
72.
Or, mm-hmm. Yeah, in that old timely, and it does in fact start there. Mm-hmm. But what happens is there is some villain from the future who goes back in order to do something, we don't know what, and whatever he tries to do ends up throwing Red Wolf into the present day.
Right, and that happened at the end of the first issue.
Right, so, you know, I was like, oh, this is Nathan Edmondson. There's a new one this week. I should read these. So I sat down and read them, and I actually enjoyed it a lot. A, because it wasn't set in the Old West for the entire storyline, so it did bring it into the present, so I enjoyed that. I enjoy the time travel, you know, person at a time, can't fit in. You know, someone asks him, is there anybody you can call? Do you know any local numbers? And he just thinks for a minute. He goes, 4. They're like, no, a phone number. Can you think of, like, what's your social security number? And he's like, I don't know, 7. They're like, no. Like, what? Like, you know, he has no concept of what's going on around here, and he's trying to fit in. But at the same time, he is a sheriff from the Old West. So when the meth heads are – having a shootout at the trailer park. He, even though he's handcuffed in the back seat of the police car as they're trying to figure out what's going on, he kicks out the window, slides out handcuffed, and ends up taking out one of the bad guys on his own because he is a badass dude from the Old West. So it's still an action-packed story. It's still really enjoyable. The artwork on it is okay. It's not the greatest. It's a little confusing sometimes. It is a much more simple style than what we see in a lot of the mainline books. And considering, who Edmondson was working with, Mitch Gerards on Punisher and Phil Noto on, Black Widow, it is a little jarring with what we have in this book, but it still serves its purpose and it works. It's just not the greatest in the world. But the story is a lot more fun than I expected. With the being out of time, not understanding the culture, people are using a lot of phrases and the colloquialisms that we use. He has no idea. He takes everything much more literally because he doesn't understand what everybody's talking about, which just makes it fun, makes it very entertaining. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. I read the review copies that we have, but I enjoyed it enough, and I know it's going to be ending soon, so it's going to be a finite number of issues. I'm going to run out and actually grab the print copies from the store and actually add them to my collection because I did enjoy it enough, and it is something that I think once it wraps up, you can easily sit down and read the entire, if it's going to be 5 issues or 6 issues or whatever, it reads well enough that it's one of those books you can sit down and read in an afternoon.
I know this book is probably on the chopping block. Have they announced that it's coming to an end yet, like they have with Black Knight?
Well, they didn't officially announce that it's ending, but it's not showing up in the solicits and the Amazon listing for the trade. Like list it as the complete series, I think, is what they list instead of volume one. So, gotcha. I mean, that's your clue that it's not sticking around.
Gotcha.
It was like after I read the first issue, I was kind of intrigued to where it was going, but I just kind of left it. And I totally, every time it comes out, I like totally keep forgetting this comes out.
So. Yeah, so it's fun to read. It's definitely not what I expected. It's much better than I expected. So I have to give Edmondson credit for that, for, basically taking a property that I cared absolutely nothing about because I don't care about the 1872 or the old town of Timely in the Old West and, all of that stuff. No interest at all, but he's actually taken the character and made it interesting. So, I'm down. I'm going to read it, and here
cool.
it comes.
Cool.
I wonder if the Rangers are going to show up before the book ends, if it does. There was those
Rangers?
Like Phantom Ranger and Firebird and all of them from West Coast Avengers. Time, who should be around that wherever he is now.
Right.
That's a reference I'm sure like two people would have.
I recognize a couple of characters that you just dropped, so.
Yeah.
Just real quick, the last two books on my list this week, Totally Awesome Hulk number 3. We have some more development of the Amadeus Cho as Incredible Hulk character. It's actually a pretty entertaining read. Fin Fang Foom makes a cool appearance in this. There's a couple of great jokes that are told in this. We have some more insight into what happened to Banner, and which is going to be teased, I guess, for the next few issues. And we also have a further description of the interesting dynamic inside Amadeus Cho's psyche. Between like him kind of controlling the rage monster that is the Incredible Hulk, and there's definitely a little bit of a dialogue being had in between the two in the depths of his psyche. This is a fun read. The Frank Cho art in this is I hope that he's able to keep up a fairly regular schedule on this. I know he's not the quickest artist in the world. It's pretty. It's pretty well done. The coloring really does do a lot to help this book along too. It's just a pretty well done story. And the last book that's on my list this week is Spider-Gwen number 5. And if anyone is not reading this right now, this is definitely a couple of steps forward in the character development of not just Gwen, who we really don't see in this issue, but more of her father, Captain Stacy, and some of the other surrounding characters, namely the Daredevil of this world, Matt Murdock, who is taking on a slightly different role, and the Harry Osborn of this world, who is definitely taking on a very different role. If you haven't read the last issue, definitely try to catch up, because you'll be kind of caught out there without a lot of background story if you don't read the previous issue or two and pick up this issue. But if you're a fan of the Spider-Gwen character and this alternate reality where so many of the well-known characters of the Marvel Universe have taken on very different roles, pick this up. I like this. Latour is doing a great job. This issue is not done by Robbie Rodriguez. It's by Chris Visions, but the colorist is still Rico Renzi, so the palette of the book remains. The color palette remains the same. So, if you're a fan of the character, if you're a fan of alternate realities, I know Dirt is a fan, pick this up. It's pretty well done.
Yeah. Yeah, Spider-Man, good work. I kind of like the whole alternate reality part of the book. You know, the different people that we kind of know it something of from the 616, kind of in new lights and whatnot. Sure. So,
and I'm a big fan of the character. Right, I was going to say, I'm a big fan of alternate realities in moderate dosages. whereas I'm not a fan of, all the multiverses, going all the way back. I'm closing the circle, going all the way back to the Batman number 49 criticisms I had. I can take the multiverse stuff in moderate doses. I can't take, 50,000, interpretations of Batman coming all into one issue.
Mm. And I kind of like that, they don't do it that often, even though they have done it a couple of times. Like, Spider-Gwen still is tied to the 616 because you've seen her go
in Spider-Verse stuff, and Web Warriors.
And even in this book, I think it was a couple of issues back, she went go visit Spider-Woman.
Correct.
So, they're still keeping that as a tie, but still keeping it here. So, I think I have... If anybody else got anything, I got one more book.
Go for it. I think Dirt's got a couple, so finish up your list.
I'll get this one out of the way because this will be quick. Jonesy number one. This is from Boom. This was written by Sam Humphries and Caitlin Rose. I can't remember her last name.
Is it Boyle?
Thank you, Boyle. As we see on the screen right here. This is... So Jonesy is a teen girl who is who is different in the way that, teens kind of be. She's kind of an outsider in the teen realm, let's just say. Not for any of them, because she's the weird girl, I guess, as it's being painted. And this is pretty much her around Valentine's Day being all, Valentine's Day. And, of course, that's the one popular girl in school.
Mm-hmm. It's very timely issue.
Yeah, exactly. Who's getting all the carnations, which that was a flashback that I was like, wow, Carnation Day. Yeah, Carnation Day in school. I was like, who remembers that stuff? Man. But this is pretty much her going to the day. I think she has delusions of having some sort of superpower, or maybe not, to make other people fall in love with other people. Like, it kind of comes off as if it's all, we don't know if it's actually in her head that's the case, mm-hmm. or it's just a series of coincidences, or actually she does have some sort of power. But this is pretty much her going through, just being her during the day and just being against everything, the social norms and whatnot.
Gotcha.
Of the school that she's with is in. It was an interesting read. The humor was, I guess I could kind of say, slightly different from Sam Humphries usual work. But then again, if you only know him from the Marvel stuff or wherever else he's written for, the superhero stuff, it might not be that different. May or may not be that different. But
and I was going to say the
look. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the art is reminiscent of Brian Lee O'Malley's Scott Pilgrim stuff.
Yeah.
You could definitely, it seems very reminiscent of that. So if you're familiar with that art style, and it's a very cartoony look, uses a lot of different perspectives. The art kind of floats off the page. I wouldn't say there's a lot of depth to the art, but it's definitely influenced by that style. So if if you're into that and you like what you heard from Roddy Cat just now, pick this up.
Well, and O'Malley even did a variant cover. I think it's the subscription variant. Then he's the one that actually did that artwork.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting read. It has a certain charm to it, and it's only four issues. So I'm going to see what the next one holds.
All right. Cool. I've got a few books to throw out here. I can do them pretty quick. Lantern City issue 10. The story has been about this steampunk city of the future. The poor classes live at the bottom and the rich live at the top. And war has broken out. The city is now under siege, and you've got this rebellion coming up from the bottom. And as it turns out, people have been fighting for this rebellion. They wanted to get the rich aristocrats out and, you know, turn the city back over to the people. But as the war starts to build, they begin to realize that the guy who's the great leader of the rebellion is going to end up being as much of a dictator as the people who've been holding them down this whole time. It's that idea that, you know, the power corrupts. Now that he's got an army and the people behind him, he's becoming as bloodthirsty and as twisted and evil as he claims all of the upper crust people are. Right. So again, this story is playing on all the preconceived notions that everybody has about, the interplay between the different classes and, people not caring about the other people, and these people are good and those people are bad. It turns out, you know, everybody is just... is just people. You're going to have the bad people at the top, and you have bad people at the bottom. And when they come and fight, it doesn't matter what the fight is about. Someone's always going to try to take control, and the normal people get caught in the middle. The artwork is beautiful. This guy, Magno, he's an artist from, I don't remember if they said he was Spain or South America, but he's got this really detailed style, lots of line work, and it's just great to look at. Characters always look consistent, but it's fun because it's an alternate history. It's not a changed in the timeline type thing that we see with a time travel book as much as a reimagining of what history could be, if things happened differently. So it's always that kind of stuff is always interesting as well. Even though I'm not like a steampunk guy who goes out and collects steampunk stuff, I still think it's interesting to see the technology and how the different things work out in the story. So it's a lot of fun.
How it could have developed,
right? Yeah, and so it's just a lot of fun. And again, I like the way it plays upon, you know, all the preconceived notions people are going to have about how things should work out, and if only we had this chance to, you know, build this uprising, and then they do, and then they find out it's not what they hoped for. That's always a fun play on those expectations. Last Sons of America.
Wait, hang on. Before you do that, I got a question or two. This is that Box Lightner attached the book,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And is that live action stuff still going on?
Yeah, they're developing it. They've already signed with a visual effects company who's going through and actually, the last time I talked to the guys, and I think I'll be meeting with them again at C2E2 this year, but the last time I talked to them is they had sat down with a visual effects company and they were going through what the look and the feel of the show was, but also trying to figure out, filming a show like this where the entire world is different, is how much do they actually have to build and how much do they need to CGI? Mm-hmm. And they wanted to CGI as little as possible so that when people are interacting, they're actually interacting with things and not just standing in front of a blue screen. But it's this balancing act that they have to figure out of how these things will all come together. So it's still in development, but it's one of those things that it's not... It's a show that you can't just, throw a bunch of people on soundstage in front of a live studio audience and start, filming. There's a lot of preparation that goes into it, like a major motion picture or, even the new Star Trek series. They announced a new Star Trek series, but it's still, like, what, a year and a half, 2 years away? So
right, yeah.
It's that same type of thing where they're working on it, and it's still in production, but it's not the type of thing that you just turn around and snap your fingers and it's on TV. Okay, so Last Sons of America, in the not-too-distant future, biological weapon has rendered families in the United States unable to have children. So there are these groups that go to other parts, impoverished parts of the world, and find... families that have children that they can't take care of, and so they broker to bring them to the United States, compensate the families for them, and the children, have the ability to grow up in, a better environment, so to speak. One of the major drug cartels that runs one of these small countries, you find out that the daughter of this cartel guy actually wants to escape. And so she's gone to these guys to try to find a way to get out of her country and get to the United States. But, of course, once they decide to do that, all of the police are under the power of the cartels, all of the brokers that move people have to pay off the cartels. So now suddenly they're finding themselves having to try to, work their way through this system, but everyone's working against them. And it's one of those where you don't know who you can trust. Every time they turn around, someone's pulling a gun on them. There's a bounty on their head, which makes it very difficult for them to move around. And so there's a lot of just... there are three main characters, and you just get the feeling like they're not all going to survive. You just don't know who, you know, isn't going to make it. But the one of the key things here that I love about this is also the artwork from Matthew Dow Smith. Mm-hmm. It's just really, he just has this fantastic Mike Mignola-inspired style, but it's more realistic, whereas Mignola does demons and you know, all that kind of stuff. Smith is much more, you know, grounded in the real world, but it's still a great, dark style.
I was about to say, it's reminiscent of, like, Mitch Gerard stuff, too.
Yeah. Thick line work.
Yes, and Jean-Paul Dumont, too.
Yeah. So the story has been good, again, for the twists and turns and the intrigue that it throws in there. You don't know who you can trust and who's going to survive and what's going on. And it's just been a lot of fun. And especially in this issue, a lot of the things that they thought happened in the background, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain without spoiling everything, but they thought they were working in particular legal avenues, and it turns out that things aren't quite as squeaky clean as they thought. Even, you know, with the good that they think they're trying to do, there's also a dark side to everything that happens. So mm-hmm. It's kind of an eye-opening for them in this issue, but a good, dark, gritty story that, you know, you're rooting for the heroes, but the world that they're in is just so bad that, you know, it's kind of hard to read through sometimes. The last book here that I'm going to talk about real quickly is The Last Contract. This is a man, an elderly man who was involved in a series of hits. He was a hitman in his younger days. And for some reason, someone involved in the illegal activities he did has decided to turn against everybody he worked with and basically has made a list and is going through and taking out all the people he worked with in the past in his criminal enterprises. So this guy who was a hitman, 20, 30 years ago, now finds that his life is in danger, and this new generation of hitmen are coming after him, and he has to not only find out why someone's trying to kill him, who it is that's trying to kill him, but he's also trying to save some of the other people that were involved, and the one guy in particular he can't save. The guy already died, but he has a son, and they're going to kill the son just to cover their tracks, so he's trying to protect the son as well as keep himself alive. So there's a lot of dynamics going on in the story. It's another one of those dark noir type stories, but I always think it's fun when you have these stories like this or like Red, which came out from Vertigo several years ago and turned into that Bruce Willis movie franchise. Right. When you have this older guy, quote unquote, coming out of retirement, to take on these new generation of killers, it's a fun, gritty story. And again, the artwork really helped sell this story. It's I don't even know how to pronounce this name, Esterin, but it's a lot of line artwork with this dark watercolor coloring that goes with it. So you have these stark, dark lines, and then this kind of wash, this dirty wash of smear of colors that go with it. So it really has a unique look to it, but once again, the story is a lot of fun. I just enjoy it a lot. So anytime there's old people killing these young whippersnappers, it's always a good time.
All right.
All right, so that's what I got.
We are at Click of the Week time this week.
And I gave mine away at the very beginning of the show. For me, it's Batman. I love drawing in those old stories and bringing it back around to fulfill the history and the destiny of the Batman.
Mine was pretty much the biggest surprise ever for me doing these picks, clicks of the week. It's Spider-Man Deadpool number 2. Out of nowhere, this came out and took the crown for this week for me.
You should know the Deadpool books are great, right? I mean, isn't that the rule of thumb that if it's got Deadpool, it's got to be quality?
Good gracious.
Tim had a pick on the list. What was Tim's pick?
It was Guardians of the Galaxy number 9.
Nice.
Yeah, which, yeah, that's a good pick.
He should have to be here to justify that.
Probably send out a tweet right now.
I know, right? Yeah, so Tim, if you're still watching, you got a couple of minutes. Yeah. I think I'm going to go with Illuminati number 4. I enjoyed the book. The Thor Titania fight was great. The whole dynamic of the book is pretty cool. So, and I'm curious to see what it becomes.
Oh, and I forgot about this book earlier, but I got to throw a shout out. Even though we're here at the end, where'd it go? I just saw it a minute ago. What happened to it? There it is. Badger number 1.
Oh yeah, you mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned Badger earlier. This book was also a lot of fun, even though it's like a runaway freight train of a story. You've got like so much story is packed into this first book that it just flies by. But the good part is Badger is completely crazy. He's multiple personality insane. And so that always makes for a good time as well.
We don't need no stinking badgers.
Mike Barron and Jim Fern. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Wrap it up.
Oh, we got some notification. Oh, I thought maybe Tim had given us a notification on Twitter, but that's someone else. Okay. All right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our show. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to go to theclicknation.com. And also, remember for next week, theclicknation.com/live in order to check out the show. That way you don't have to watch for the link to pop up on Twitter. You don't have to wait for it to show up on YouTube. You don't have to wait for the podcast to come down. You can just go to theclicknation.com/live and check it out right there as it happens. You can also check me out at popculturenetwork.com. Check me out. That's what I'm saying, ladies. Come check me out. you can also go to tinycc/Vine Comics, and you can find my 6-second comic reviews on Vine, over 50,000 loops. I'm almost at 52,000 loops doing comic reviews, 6-second comic reviews on Vine. So make sure you go and check that out. Always on Twitter, at @PCN_dirt. We also have @Agent_70. He's the man behind the sound effects and the sunglasses every right. week, and a new set of headphones.
Yes, and a shirt and tie this week, again.
He has to accessorize with his fashion. And finally, @RoddyCat. What is Roddy? He's @NewsNerdsNeed, but I don't know if this is news that nerds need right here.
Oh boy.
Shout out to Tim DOGG98, who is not here on the show with us tonight, but is in the audience watching as he prepares to embark on a trip over this President's Day / Valentine's Day weekend. And he's also going to be hitting up Dallas Comic Con. So if you're there, be on the lookout for TimDog98 from the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
I love how it's President's Day / Valentine's Day weekend. Like, those are equal holidays in everybody's eye. You know, it's like, well, I got my girlfriend a card for Valentine's Day, but I got to get my mom something for President's Day. I got to go get her a nice Thomas Jefferson card from American Greetings for this weekend. I like how you equate those. That was good.
Well, you know, we actually get the day off on Monday, so.
Oh, and some people see Hamilton.
Guys who work in comic book stores do not get Monday off, like ever. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And Roddy.
Go see Hamilton. It's probably pretty good, I hear. I don't know.
I was about to say, why are we showing Misty Knight?
Just because.
Okay.
Black History Month? There we go.
All right. Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again next week.
Yay! Hey!